The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. We have spent several programs now discussing the phylum Mollusca in general. We have talked lastly about the cephalopods, the octopuses, the squid, etc. And on the last program, we talked a little bit about some of the difficulties of the supposed evolution of mollusks, that is, where they could have come from, what their ancestors might have been. I thought it might be interesting for some of you, for me to share with you a comment that is found in the textbook that we use in invertebrate zoology. The textbook is entitled Integrated Principles of Zoology by Hickman, Roberts, and Larson. I remember the first editions of this back when I was in undergraduate school, I think. this one, particular one, as I recall, is the 10th edition. But this is the comment that is made. Let me preface this with another comment. I am sure that the problems of mollusk evolution are not the sorts of things that the average believer is going to be concerned with. And my purpose in spending time in our programs on this is not necessarily to inform individual believers about how they can quarrel with evolutionists. My primary purpose is simply to show people, believers, those who have trusted the Lord as their Savior, that there are sensible reasons for disagreeing with the general notion that all of the living things that we see on the earth today have gotten there by a process of evolution rather than being created. And we run across the notion that Bible believers are ignorant, lazy, have no notion of what's going on, etc. And this certainly ought not to be the case for reasons that we talked about a long time ago. We have biblical commandments that we are to be ready always to give an answer to those who ask a reason of the hope that lieth in us with meekness and fear, 1 Peter 3:15. So we have some obligation to do that. And it certainly is not possible for every believer to sit down and study evolution the rest of his life. But as a biology teacher, I have spent more than 40 years now studying that subject. I started out because it was a subject of importance to me, both in graduate school and in teaching, that as a believer, I needed to have a defensible, sensible reason for presenting information that would be contrary to much of the written material that we were using in our textbooks. So, while I'm not, I have no desire to turn everybody into a knowledgeable anti-evolutionist debater, I hope what will come through is that whether you know the details of all of this or not, there are sensible answers, and the position to accept the biblical teaching of creation and to reject the idea of evolution is a reasonable position. There are scientific, logical, biblical reasons to take that position. And I'm afraid sometimes in all the details that occur in discussing various phases of the subject matter necessary, that might be lost sight of. So I thought maybe it'd be a good time to remind you. Now, what I'm reading here is a comment that occurs in chapter 17 of Hickman's book. This is the chapter on mollusks, and it's in a section that is entitled Phylogeny and Adaptive Radiation. Phylogeny, of course, is simply a synonym for evolution. Adaptive radiation is referring to the notion that organisms can adapt themselves to varying kinds of environments, and of course, that certainly is true. We would disagree that this adaptive radiation can extend to the point where one kind of organism eventually is going to form another kind of organism. Now, our concerns in recent programs have been with the mollusks specifically. And as a part of the question of evolution, where did they come from? What organisms were ancestral to the mollusks? We spent some time quite a while ago in looking at the 10 major animal phyla, and we saw, among other things, that there really isn't any ancestor. You look at the 10 major animal phyla, and there's not one of those phyla that a person would look at and say, oh, well, yeah, this is the group that is ancestral to the mollusks. We don't find anything of that sort. We do not find any organisms that would have been derived from the mollusks. These are simply a group that we find in nature. Now, let me go back and review briefly the 10 major animal phyla. Protozoa, these are unicellular organisms. Porifera, the sponges. The cnidaria or Coelenterata, these are hydra, jellyfish, coral. The platyhelminthes, the flatworms. The askhelminthes, these are roundworms. The mollusks, the next group we're going to talk about when we get through this will be the annelids, phylum Annelida. These are the earthworms. Then the arthropods, the echinodermata and chordata. Now, as you listen to this list of phyla and think about if you're familiar with organisms in each of those phyla, and I would assume most people are to some degree, you just think about the kinds of organisms that you see and try and pick out of those other 9 phyla ancestors for the mollusks. And there just aren't any. Pick whatever characteristic you want, and there just isn't one that allows the sensible idea that mollusks have descended from them. And the evolutionist's response to this, of course, is simply, well, it didn't come from another of the organisms of different phyla, but there was a common ancestor for them. And as we have talked about repeatedly, if this were true, then we certainly would expect to be able to find some of those common ancestors in the fossil record. And this is what is simply missing as we examine that. Now, this is a comment from the Invertebrate Zoo text. Opinions differ, however, as to whether mollusks were derived from a flat worm-like ancestor, flatworm-like. That would be tapeworms and flukes, those kinds of organisms. This is the first possibility for the supposed ancestor. A flatworm-like ancestor independent of the annelids, that is different from the annelids. Now, again, let me explain one detail here. Flatworms, some of you may be familiar with some of the tapeworms, and if you have seen pictures of them or even seen preserved ones or live ones for that matter, they do have sections. The body is made up of sections. In the case of the annelid, there is a characteristic which is known as metamerism, or the presence of metamers or somites or segments. In earthworms, if you have seen those, these simply appear as rings, a series of rings that compose the annelid body. And the flatworm and the annelid are very, very different. The segmentation that we see in flatworms is not the metamerism or the presence of somites as we see it in annelids. Now, how much of the specifics of what I'm saying soaks in is not particularly important, but the point is no one is going to argue that, no evolutionist is going to argue that the annelids, the earthworms, have evolved from tapeworms or vice versa. But what we're getting ready to see here is a possibility in the mind of the authors of our Invertebrate Zoo text that the mollusks have actually come from some kind of an annelid, that is a long worm creature that has a series of rings in it. So opinions differ, however, as to whether mollusks were derived from first a flatworm-like ancestor independent of the annelids, secondly, share an ancestor with the annelids after the advent of the coelom. In other words, the second possibility is that there was a common ancestor for the worms and for the mollusks. The coelom here, of course, is simply a term that refers to the body cavity. Among other things, the tapeworms don't have body cavities. The annelids do have, and that is the reason for this qualification that's in the second possibility. First of all, mollusks would have been derived from flatworm-like ancestors independent of the annelids. Two, share an ancestor with the annelids. That is, both worms and mollusks would have come from the same ancestor. Or number three, share a metameric common ancestor with the annelids. So, first, you have an organism that came from a flatworm, a platyhelminthes, or you have one, the mollusk came from an ancestor that was shared between annelids and mollusks, or it came from an ancestor that had the somites but was not an annelid. Now, those are, in essence, the three possibilities that are listed in a current invertebrate zoology textbook. Now, let me go back to the quote that we looked at on our last program. This is a quote from a man by the name of Bruce Runiger and John Papita, Jr., and it appeared in an article that occurred in Science in Molluscan Phylogeny or Molluscan Evolution. This is the statement that's there. Stasek theorized that the extant mollusks, those that are alive today, are the progeny of three separate lineages that separated before the phylum was well established. So this evolutionist notion is that each of these groups of mollusks have come from three separate kinds of ancestors. But I want you to note his next comment about this, as we saw in the last program. He wrote that no known intermediate forms, fossil or living, bridge the enormous gaps between any two of the three lineages and therefore treated each as a separate subphylum. In other words, there was no organism that could have been looked on as connecting any of these three kinds. So he's arguing then for three separate ancestors for mollusks. Now again, the details here are not particularly important, but there is a conclusion that is certainly worth noting. The conclusion, very simply, is that the suggestions that the evolutionists have about the possibility for common ancestors are mutually exclusive. You simply can't. The mathematical possibilities just don't exist. We do not find these organisms in the fossil record. And the possibility of having such an array of possible ancestors, theoretically, is simply indicative of the fact that the evolutionists really do not know, have no idea what was or what could have been a common ancestor for the mollusk, and therefore they really have no sensible view of the possible evolution.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.